All right. So the West Nile mosquitoes now aren't enough around here, Dan Zangrilli. Mm.
I'm sorry, you're going to have to catch me up to speed.
And I don't know, I saw a story in the Trib today on mosquitoes in various parts of Western Pennsylvania doing things or carrying things that aren't good. Now I see a headline from Daily Mail, I think, that a respected Harvard astrophysicist has revealed new evidence suggesting there's a mysterious object barreling toward Earth this December and could be an alien craft. You nervous at all?
No, because you're here sitting in front of me. You're not up in that alien craft. I would just think it would be you coming to work.
If I told you this thing was 7 miles long, would you feel a little more nervous?
I suppose. But I could see your palms sweating from here. The anxiety is...
Every day is it's something. If it's not the mosquitoes, it's the alien spacecraft. Okay, so it's one thing or another, Sean. You can't relax for a second anymore.
Joe, I was just talking to somebody here a moment ago. We have to live and deal in worst-case scenarios and then just be okay with them. So what's the worst-case scenario?
Then it hits Earth and everything blows up, I guess.
Okay, and then what?
No more pirates.
Okay, so there you have it. So are you okay? Are you okay with any of these scenarios, Joe?
I mean, guess the more you talk about it, that one might be okay. Yes. In the meantime, we have a trade deadline, Dan. It's tomorrow at 6 p.m. I don't even know where to start. I'll start where I started on the show today. I'm starting to get concerned that Ben Cherington may be, and Ken Rosenthal alluded to this, maybe thinking to himself, my God, we're winning. We've won 7 of 8, 4 in a row. We're basically 500 under Don Kelly, I think 2 games below. My best chance to keep my job is to keep that going. Therefore, I'm going to find a way to keep Mitch Keller, David Bednar, maybe even Tommy Pham, who's been as good as anybody for about a month and a half, that he might sacrifice what's best for the franchise for what's best for him. That's the best way to say it that I can think of. Thoughts?
See, I don't think that he, say what you want about him. And this goes back to Neil Huntington. And I think this is just an overall general manager mindset. They are wired uniquely, not like the average person that's just trying to save face, especially if they've got some comfort and security, and I think Cherington does, and he would work elsewhere, maybe not as a general manager.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Parado, I think, I was told anyway, reported that Cherington is signed through 27. Do you have the same information?
I don't know, but even if he is or was, okay, that's a shoulder shrug from both standpoints, right? He's secure, and even if his contract ended in 25, he's secure. He's worked all those years in the game and at high levels. I'm sure he would be, again, okay, would work elsewhere as
Fair
an advisor or an AGM. So I think their mindset is more so, and he kind of said this on Sunday to us, they just do the work. They literally are married, maybe unhealthily so, to a process, regardless, even almost like a martyr. Like, we believe in this process, even if it means our own demise. That's how Huntington, many general managers around the league are wired. So I don't necessarily get on board with that thought that he's going to do something to save his job.
Fair enough. Does he strike you in the time that you've known him and have observed his work as a guy who leans more toward big risk or low risk? Is he trying to hit home runs, or is he choking up even before he gets to 2 strikes and trying to hit singles? Which way do you view him?
So it's funny, on the literally used in Sean, if you go in the Pirates pre-folder and News Boss, I asked him Sunday about risk, taking on risk. Are you risk averse? Because listen, if you're going to trade a bona fide guy, because like thinking of Keller or anybody under contractual control that has a track record, you need to be able to get a bona fide bat in return, you would think, as opposed to the Pirates unnecessarily taking on risk.
Yeah.
He mentioned, and you could revisit this clip here, that the Pirates need to embrace and be willing to take on risk. So I think that almost too much so, he would be willing and able and receptive to rolling the dice.
But he hasn't yet, though.
Sure he did. In the Starling Marte deal, it blew up. he did in the Jameson Taillon deal. It blew up. They didn't work. They took a risk because guess what? We can get Roansy Contreras. Really high upside. Unknown, that's the risk, but that's the gamble that a team like the Pirates have to take.
So you're talking risk from the perspective of your return and not having bona fide major leaguers as part of it.
Correct, but big upside, Leover Peguero, Brennan Malone, they have a huge ceiling here, but we don't know who they are. That's, I guess, the risk. The lottery, he's willing to buy a lottery ticket and hope that he hits and feels that a team like the Pirates, and he qualified it, needs to be willing to take on those risks because, well, that's the only way that you can get the aircraft carrier. That's why you trade Tony Watson for O'Neill Cruz. He was the low A ball player that just happened to, dare I say, work out. So those type of risks are the ones that he's saying that the Pirates need to take. Now, financial risks as far as going into contracts and things of that nature, it's probably not necessarily a question for him. It's a question for his boss.
Yeah, I'm not interested in an A-ball player right now. I'm hoping at the very least that they get somebody who fits the profile of an Owen Casey from the Cubs, who clearly seems more than ready but is being blocked. But let's first talk about this, Dan. And we're talking to Dan Zangrilli. You know him from pregame, postgame, all things Pirates. What about an established bat or somewhat established bat? Let me give you some names of guys whose names have been thrown out there. Obviously, if you're the Pirates, you need at least 1 year of control after this. Taylor Ward is out there. Stephen Kwan, two-time All-Star, is out there. Jaron Duran is out there. With three years left for Duran. Kwan, 2 years left. Ward, just one. Joe Adell out in Anaheim is another guy with 2 years left. And the guy that I would prefer because he's consistent and proven, and I think the minute you put him in your lineup, he's your best hitter, is Yandy Diaz out in Tampa.
Tampa, sure.
He's going to be 34, but he fits the Skeens window with 2 years left. What do you think of a player of those profiles, ones like them, getting somebody that we already know can at least do some damage?
Sure, and they have a track record. That's absolutely what you need to be trading for. Unfortunately, I think the general manager would be more inclined to take the riskier option, and that's somebody with the 6 years of control, somebody that can extend this window, somebody that, you know, you're going to be able to realize multiple years as opposed to a Ward in the 1 year. Like, I think the trade this past offseason really illuminates that. Like, look, the Guardians were willing to deal Josh Naylor and Spencer Horowitz. The cost for Naylor was very similar, in many respects less than Horowitz. The Pirates gave up three pieces to get Horowitz, including Luis Ortiz. Well, what was more intriguing, albeit riskier, to the Pirates was the controllable piece of Horowitz, even though Naylor clearly would have improved at least this year your lineup. Naylor's on a one-year deal.
Yes. When you say extend the window to me is Paul Skeens, which means I'm taking Naylor over Horowitz,
and I'm taking
one of these guys.
And that's the nuanced area and the fence that I think the Pirates are straddling. They want their cake and they want to eat it too. They want the good player, maybe is on the precipice of breaking out, doesn't have the track record, that's their risk, but their reward is if it hits, we got him for three more years, as opposed to the sure thing over here, Naylor, 1 year deal. Well, we only have him for the 1 year. So it's trying to have your cake and eat it too, and sometimes I just don't think you're able to do that.
Well, rarely, but as Sean Don't Call Me Seth Meyers here says, maybe with such good pieces to deal in Bednar and Keller, maybe they can have one of each. And maybe a prospect or two thrown in there, a red hot Tommy Pham thrown into a deal, a key Brian Hayes, I don't know, Dennis Santana. They've got pieces here.
So we're talking about a three-team deal right there.
Well, or separate deals. One where you get a Yandy Diaz, and then another one where you get an Owen Casey.
And all of the things that you're talking about, Joe, and this is why I've said it from the right now, like the deadline isn't July 31st to improve your 26 roster. All of this stuff can be done in December. I think there's a higher likelihood of what you're saying, what needs to be done, and I would agree with you here. I don't think this happens in July because Yandy Diaz isn't, the Rays are in it. They're not going to detract with Diaz.
Well, they're talking, they're budging on him because they're barely in it.
They're a buy-sell team like the Diamondbacks.
Right.
So are they doing that now? No, I think all of the bigger deals that are going to be really big needle movers for both teams, I think everybody takes a breath. And when we're talking about 26 roster construction, you do this in December.
But the taking a breath part is sometimes the problem, too, because then people do it soberly. I would rather have them drunk with visions of contention the way the Padres were a couple of years
ago. But to get bonafide bats.
That was a deadline deal. They traded Soto to the Padres, and they wound up getting James Wood and Abrams and Gore in that deal at the deadline. Sometimes you can find people. And the second piece to this is that Bednar and Keller are at their highest peak value right now.
I get that.
Keller hasn't shown he can finish seasons. What if he crumbles again in August and September? And what if Bednar slumps?
So the Soto deal, though, that was a high-risk deal for the Nationals.
Yeah, high risk.
So, but it kind of contradicts what you're saying. You want bona fide bats.
I want both.
Well, you can probably get the riskier guys, the top 100 guys at the deadline, yes. But does that make you better for 26? Maybe. Bona fide bats will make you better for 26.
Yeah.
Those are coming in December.
They're not
coming in July.
I hope.
They're not.
If my trade assets are still as productive as they are right now, what if Mitch Keller, like he has for the last 4 years, struggles in August and September?
I think the overall complete picture and the value of Keller really doesn't change all that much, because everything that you're afraid of with Keller falling off a cliff and his value going down, I don't think it's going to precipitously drop here, because everybody has a long memory of what's happened each of the last two seasons with Keller. So they're probably looking for the same thing, maybe even anticipating it. They're looking at Keller as the complete player, taking the good with the bad. And I don't really think that the back half of 25 is going to change the perception and the valuation of him one way or the other, because teams already know he is who he is.
Dan Zangrilli, we can say he's on the fan hotline, even though he's right here in studio, is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Fan Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net, and you can communicate with Sean Myers right here on the fan text line. Brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. All right, we can talk all day about what we think they should do. What will they do? Will Keller and Bednar be dealt at this deadline? To me, they're clearly the two biggest possibilities. Although, Dan, when I look closer at Bailey Falter, his resume this year and last is not very different from Keller's. The ERA is the same, plus he's a lefty. The whip is better both years, I might add. What about Bailey Falter, and what about a Santana? They've got some pretty nice assets. Who goes and who stays?
I think all of the controllable guys stay. When I say controllable, I'm talking really about Keller, who I think I've maintained that I don't believe he's going at the deadline. I've said that for a month. And
yeah.
I think that's looking more and more to be the case. And if you're going to deal him, the propensity of that happening, again, off season. Reynolds, Cruz, all those guys, they stay. I think a reliever goes. I'd be surprised if it's Santana and Bednar.
Mm.
I just don't think that they're going to detract that much. I just don't think that they may not both be here opening day, but as far as deadline deals, I think a reliever can go. All of the expiring guys gone. Heaney, IKF.
Pham?
Ferguson, I would think Pham, sure. And some of these guys, if you really like them, IKF, Pham, you can re-engage with them in the offseason to try to re-sign them. There's no rules against that, but you're going to absolutely try to get what you can for them. It's not going to be a significant return for any of them, but all of the expiring guys, yeah, I think they're as good as gone.
How many more years for Bednar?
He has one.
One.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he'll you know, after 26 is his walk year. So, sure, there's, you know, pretty good track record, pitching very well. You'll fetch a nice piece. Now that the Emmanuel Clase thing has gone on, I think teams are going to be far more drunk to make those type of deals for somebody like Bednar, for sure.
Okay, so if they were to deal Keller, if they did, let's say in the offseason, I don't mind a rotation. If you're telling me next year's rotation would start off with Skeens, Chandler, Oviedo, Falter, and there's a guy that he pitched last night that I love moving forward. has a lively arm and seems to have an idea of what he's doing. That's Ashcraft. Do you project him as a starter next year?
They do. I haven't seen enough of him as a starter. I'm almost really more tempted to keep him in the role that he's been in because he's been really good there. But how about the guy going today in Burrows? Each of the last two starts.
Doesn't this enable you to motivate you to trade Keller for what you need? Keller's been great this year. So has Skeens. So has Falter. And they can't win because they can't hit.
One of those guys is a sure thing. Falter, he can throw to a .76 earned run average in May and then throw to a 5.5 in June. So he's a bit more mercurial. Overall, the body of wax is going to be pretty good, right? At the end of the year, what he averages out, he's probably going to be a high 3, maybe a low 4.
He's a left-handed Keller.
He is, but he's a back end of the rotation guy. So your sure things and what you really know about going in then, if you deal Keller to 26, you have two guys that have the track record that you know they are who they are. The other three that you mentioned, you could hit 3 for 3 or you could go 0 for 3. There's a lot of fluctuation and volatility there, I would say, one way or the other. I don't know. Do you feel good going? Now that I painted it that way, you feel good going into 26?
Because I think there's other options, both young and old. And if Charrington has shown he can do one thing good, it's fine veteran arms to plug into that rotation.
And that's fair. And then, okay, so then you keep Keller. Now you've got four comfortable, predictable arms. And then the other pieces are higher upside and then injury attrition, right?
But who's hitting for that depth? That's the question.
I get it. You're going to have to certainly dip into the surplus. No doubt. There's no ifs, ands, or buts around it because you haven't developed well enough. There's nothing depth-wise from a bat perspective that you have. Nobody's pushing anybody for their job in this system, and that's maybe the biggest problem of them all. To what the Pirates' issues are.
Theoretically, and I know this is very theoretical, if you move on from Keller's salary, that should free up money in the offseason that you can put toward a bat as well.
Absolutely. No doubt. There's definitely a case to be made both ways, and I think that you'll have to do something of that significance to move the needle the way that you want to. And maybe even you package a couple of these arms, and I think you need to do a bigger deal to get some bigger pieces. It's got to be a blockbuster trade where you're getting two bats, maybe even five pieces in return, but maybe two bats that are controllable, that are fairly major league ready, and then a couple of lottery tickets, and that's your roll of the dice, that's your Hail Mary.
Sean, do you have a burning question? Are you sitting over there wanting to ask something?
I guess it's kind of a question of, you mentioned a Stephen Kwan with the Guardians probably out of the race, or a Tampa, or even a Baltimore, which we know has had a ton of great hitters that they've moved on from. They traded away a guy who's become an all-star with the Marlins. What type of return would a team like that, who's not contending right now, but has been close to contending for multiple years now, look for in return? Would they want an established veteran back for a Stephen Kwan, or would they want a prospect?
Well, I think the Guardians are maybe in a bit of a different situation because they have so much going on behind the scenes, and who knows where they're going to be. So could they be fire selling, and maybe they'd be more willing to take your lottery tickets, your prospects? Yeah, perhaps. I guess it all depends on the window. I would like to think that the Orioles, because they're not too far away from a really good year last year, that this year is more of an anomaly, that they're going to want to keep more. And I don't think that they're in tear down, rebuild, blow it up mode.
But they do need pitching.
They do. So, yeah, you can, again, surplus for surplus. So, I mean, it depends if we're talking Cleveland or we're talking Baltimore. I think two teams that are on different trajectory paths, you can get a lot of things done. I mean, either way, that's why I think a multi-team deal is what is going to need to take place here, where there's a number of different players exchanged for multiple reasons. Not to answer this like in a politically correct way, but that's why I think, because everybody's needs are different and it's so nuanced, that it's got to be a 3 or 4 team blockbuster where you're getting a piece from over here, a piece for over here. These different pieces go out. Some are veterans. Some are guys that haven't touched the big leagues. They're prospects. And everybody's needs get met in a blockbuster multi-team deal like that.
All right. Another player of great interest to me, and we just saw, I don't know if Dan's aware of, were you aware of the Charlie Hayes tweet today?
No, I didn't.
Why don't you tell Dan about that?
What else is new? I'll look it up here.
Yeah, it, basically the gist of it is he said something, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, that was a few days ago,
with
right?
exclamation points that would indicate, at least in many people's opinion, that he's talking about his son and his future.
Either way, Key Brian Hayes, as great of a fielder as he is just an absolute anchor on this offense, and I don't mean that in a good way. I mean, he's sinking the ship.
My God, on the back, if you will.
He's batting fifth, for God's sakes. He has two home runs. Nothing ever happens. It just feels like it's time to move on. Do you think they will? Do you think somebody would want him? And would it be addition by subtraction because of the salary and lack of offensive production? I know it's not an exorbitant salary, but for the Pirates, it's still significant money.
To onboard that money, I think you have to pay somebody indirectly a prospect price to do that, like they did in, 2016, when they dumped the Liriano money on the Blue Jays for Drew Hutchison.
And we've been watching him for a while.
And they sent, Harold Ramirez and Reese McGuire? So there was a prospect cost to that to offload the Liriano money.
Yeah.
So if you're going to do that, it's going to cost you the Gold Glover, the really good defender. Maybe not as significantly, because the money's not as significant and there is some defensive value there, and maybe somebody feels that they can unlock him offensively. I don't know, probably not, but I don't think anybody's just like, oh yeah, I want Key Brian Hayes straight up one for one because I value him and that player for him as he currently sits. That's going to be a tough sell for any organization, big or small market, to just take on that money without getting a little kicker in return.
And chance he goes
60-40.
I think that would be really a step
sure.
forward.
And to
for
your
this
question, is it addition by subtraction? I just think a change of scenery would be great
for everybody.
For everybody, sure.
I agree. How soon before Connor Griffin gets here do you think next year?
I mean, why isn't he in Double A at this point?
Yeah, why isn't he?
I think he will be before too long. I mean, if he's on the trajectory that he's on and everything continues to go as it has, why are we ruling out next year? Why are we even ruling out opening day?
Right. It happens in other organizations.
It does. I mean, that's hard to really want to go all in on that, because that's a dangerous proposition for such a young kid to just say, okay, we're going to bypass AAA. But so far, he's shown you that he's a different breed. And if anybody could do it, he's responded to every other aggressive promotion that they've given him. Until he tells you otherwise, why not continue to stay in the left lane?
All right. Finally, Dan, I love the minor trip around the minors with the different broadcasters that you do on Sundays. I imagine you're somewhat, although nobody's fully, fluent in prospects that the Pirates could trade for. But there's a number of guys that are, first of all, enticing. Second of all, absolutely on fire right now. One of them's Owen Casey from the Cubs, who I think has three multiple homer games this month, a five home run game. He's just banging on the door to get to the majors. Another one is Spencer Jones, a 6'7 kid from the Yankees who dropped out of the top 100 before the season. Well, guess what? In AAA, he's homered 10 times in the last 18 games, to the point where people don't think the Yankees will even want to get rid of him. There's a number of other guys out there. Harry Ford, this catcher, who might not be a catcher, Sean tells me, when he gets to the majors, but he can hit. There's Tyler Locklear from the same organization, a first baseman in Seattle. There's a first baseman in Cleveland's organization who's pounding the ball. All these guys are said to be available. Do any of them tickle your fancy more than the others?
So Owen Casey is the top prospect in the Cubs organization. I've heard through my internal sourcing that his agent doesn't feel that he's going to be dealt.
Okay.
Moises Ballesteros is their number two prospect. He's really an interesting guy. Defensively, he's a catcher, a first baseman maybe. He can hit in the big leagues right now.
He can leave his glove at the hotel. Can he hit?
So what I'm hearing... But again, this chasm, AAA to the big leagues.
I know.
This Kevin Alcantara, I heard he's a goof.
And who's he?
He's in the Cubs organization, and that's, you don't want to onboard that.
Okay.
As talented as he may be, it's a problem. He'll, a slump, and all of a sudden, I need a few days off.
Give me the one guy that you heard of that you would sacrifice Keller for.
I mean, this Owen Casey Cassie, the top prospect, but I don't think the Cubs are even willing to move on from him. This Ballesteros guy is you got to get something else with Ballesteros, but maybe Ballesteros. Sure. Let me see what else here.
It's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, and that's
with
the Cubs, and then you're trading him to a division.
Yeah, that's true. That's always a little tricky.
They for whatever reason, that was something that you never did. It was like taboo almost.
Yeah.
And now I guess nobody's afraid of that, which I don't understand that logic, especially if it's a controllable guy.
Yeah.
You know.
Does Oviedo make his next start here?
I think they go with the bullpen. I was talking about this last night on the show in the wee hours. I think they're going to go with a rotation of guys. I think they're going to sprinkle in Oviedo, yes. For Heaney, this is Heaney's rotation spot. Ashcraft may get a look-see, maybe even a Chandler, bring him up for a start or two.
That'd be nice.
And heck, we may even see a Majinski, start sprinkled in there. I think they're going to take that spot, use maybe three or four different guys. Who knows if it's a true bullpen game or if these guys are doing more four innings. I think their bullpen innings are in a good spot because their starters have gone so deep in games.
I bet other organizations look at Majinski and think that would be a nice sweetener to have in any deal if the Pirates would be willing to throw that arm in.
And
there.
I mean, as Noah reported earlier this year, there was some consternation, it sounded like. And maybe when we talk about fresh starts, I mean, he's been pitching in relatively low leverage, lopsided games in the back end one way or the other, 6-1 ball games. And I'm sure that's not what he wants. And maybe when we talk about fresh starts, that's a potential for him to find a different opportunity, and the Pirates, I think, to get something decent in return.
Dan, should be a mighty interesting 27.5 hours. It's going to be very, very interesting. More than that, 30 and a half. Yeah. I can't figure out my math.
And I bet you it all just, it's going to be like from 4 to 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Like an avalanche. The dam's going to break, and then where our heads are going to be spinning. It's been so quiet, I'd say, relatively speaking, even more so than it has been in years past. So buckle up, hang on, and enjoy the ride.
Appreciate the time. Thanks. Oh, I forgot to ask you.
Yes.
I have one more question for you.
Oh, yes.
You did a great interview with Paul Skenes postgame the other day. You asked him, are we closer or further away here? Which are we? Is basically what you asked him.
Yeah, but I think that's just the big question as we assess this whole thing, and I wanted to get his thoughts because the pitching has been so, so good.
Let's hear his answer. Sean,
closer versus farther away, what's your sense as to where this team is at in that respect?
I would argue both to an extent because we are very close, but we need to consciously and intentionally make moves to get us better. I think that's, something that we might have been a victim of in the offseason a little bit, just because we have guys that can get better, on the pitching side and offensively. That seemed like that was the goal and the outlook during the offseason. Not that we made some moves, but there are guys that we have now that can get better, that will get better, but we have to make it happen. And then obviously going out there and, trading for guys, signing guys, who knows from there. But I think it's something that we have to be conscious and intentional about.
Dan, great job. And that is the most pleasant, euphemistic calling out of an ownership management group in the history of professional sports, but it's exactly what he did. He basically said, we have to get off our asses and start doing something here. We were a victim of not doing that in the off season. That's what I heard. You?
Well, I mean, number one, I didn't anticipate him going down that path. But, accountability in all forms is good, from employer to employee and employee to employer, especially when we're talking about, moving this thing forward or any sort of project forward. If you're passionate about what you do, he obviously is. And I don't know if I would go as far as calling him frustrated there, but he obviously sees things and he sees potential that is unrealized. What's wrong with accountability? He wants to be held accountable. And I would assume that his bosses want to be held accountable too. And if you do it in a healthy, respectful manner, as he did, I see nothing wrong with it. And as a leader, and I think everybody's starting to really look at him as the leader, the face, and now maybe even the voice of this franchise, that's the kind of professionalism that you need. And he always says, how you do anything is how you do everything. Well, that's a motto that you got to live. And to have him living it and being comfortable in his own skin, to respectfully voice his opinion. What's wrong with that? That is the definition of leadership. Leadership comes in all forms. And if, you know, if accountability is something that anybody is afraid of, then you've got a culture problem.
I love it, man. And that was a great job. Thank you, Dan. We'll be talking to you next week, maybe with a little bit of a reformed roster. We shall see.
Yeah. All right, Joe. Thanks.
Coming up next, some interesting doings as we do a little trip around the football world, a limitless express, if you will, in the AFC North, Cincinnati and Baltimore and Cleveland. There's some stories, including a guy who just returned to Bengals camp but still doesn't have a deal. We'll talk about that next on Pomp and Joe. Big day over at Steeler camp. Not only are they in pads for the first time, but Pat McAfee is there with his buddy Mark Cabali and his other buddy Aaron Rodgers. And Rodgers is expected to speak to the media today. So, has he already, Sean? Or is he going to momentarily, I think?
I thought I saw something about him highlighting Zach Frazier. So I don't know if this was the full.
I think it hasn't happened yet from what I understand from Brian Batko. Now, practice starts at 1:55, so he thinks sometime before then, but only after Rodgers goes on the McAfee show. When is that usually?
That's a good question. I think it started at noon today, so maybe he's already made that appearance. We'll have to investigate further.
All right. We shall do that. In the meantime, a Limitless Express, which is basically a football fix. Let's take off, shall we?
Let's do it. And we'll focus primarily on the AFC North to begin. So pretty notable developments. We'll start with the Ravens. And one of their two star tight ends, Isaiah Likely, fractured his foot on Tuesday. This was initially feared to be maybe something that would be very serious that would hamper him well into the regular season. Now the timeline indicates that he could be back for the regular season opener. How important is it that they have him available? And does it really matter if it's at the start of the season or if they get him back maybe a handful?
I don't think it matters at the start of the season, although, yeah, my understanding is he would be back by the start of the season. But the Ravens have so many weapons, and they have that guy at quarterback. If Mark Andrews doesn't drop that ball in Buffalo, I think the Ravens would have been in the Super Bowl last year. I honestly believe that.
I agree. I wonder if Likely pretty clearly overtakes Andrews this season, though.
Maybe. I think the quarterback there makes a lot of people look real good. That's what I think. Next.
Well, there's a couple of developments with the Cincinnati Bengals. One, which is kind of a minor development, is today they released running back Zach Moss. Played for them last year, didn't contribute a ton, was injured. He is now no longer a Bengal. He's had some good run throughout his career, but didn't seem like he was going to be a big-time factor for them. But someone who will be a massive factor for them potentially is Trey Hendrickson. He does not have a deal yet, but he has decided that he is going to report to camp, I believe today, after holding out for the first week or so of practice. So will this ultimately yield a deal sooner rather than later?
Yes, of course it will. A lot of these guys around the league who are having these alleged, you know, gigantic contract disputes, it's all going to end well. I mean, what else is going to happen there? He's going to wind up getting somewhere in the neighborhood of TJ and Myles Garrett. And this is a clear sign of that. In other words, nothing with him or James Cook, or even I see Micah Parsons, who's there and everything, but wants a new deal. And Florio reporting that the talks have gone, quote, backwards. It's all going to get done in the end, Sean. It's all going to get done. How often do we actually see a guy not play? How often do we see a Le'Veon Bell? I mean, that situation, the way that one actually played out, was practically one of a kind. So, yes, Hendrickson will be on the field.
This is a little bit off the NFL grid, but it relates to a guy who's an NFL legend, and that's Deion Sanders. I'm assuming you heard the news that he had his bladder removed in May, and it was a really scary situation. A very aggressive form of a cancerous tumor was discovered, Initially, I think there were some people thinking that he might have to step away from coaching altogether this year. It looks like he will stay with Colorado. Great to hear that he is seemingly okay. What does his future look like? Will he continue to be a college coach? Will he be a guy that ultimately gets into NFL coaching? What do you see for his future?
Pretty much whatever he wants, I think. That's what I believe about Deion Sanders.
For years, people speculated once Shadur left that he would follow to wherever he went.
That's right. But I think he's been successful there. I mean, they haven't won a national championship or anything, but he's been successful. And he's got that personality, and he's a very sharp guy, and he turned a program around. And I think if he wants to coach in the NFL, he'll absolutely have that opportunity someday. I saw him yesterday getting interviewed somewhere about Shadur, and he said he wanted to come visit, and Shadur said no, and I think that's a wise idea as well. I think Shadur needs to carve out his own way here without Dad showing up on the scene like he did on that, was it a conference call with some team where all of a sudden Deion broke in? Do you remember that?
And that, into a lot draft? Of teams got scared away from drafting Shadur.
Yeah, yes, and I think that that's good for Shadur, although Shador's not getting a whole lot of reps over there, even with Pickett hurt right now. Can you imagine if Dylan Gabriel starts for the Browns at the beginning of the year? Are we trending in that direction?
That would be a surprise. Even though he was drafted higher than Shadur, I don't think many people actually thought Dylan Gabriel was the better pro prospect.
Yeah.
Even though he brings a lot of, I guess, leadership and intangibles along those lines. But to continue on this topic, so Shadur Sanders with the Browns, whether or not he plays this year, we'll see. Do you see a scenario where Deion becomes their coach in the future?
Oh, man.
Because that's
no,
not...
I mean, no,
thinking,
I don't see that scenario.
He's going to be Cowboys or something like that.
Yeah.
But if his son's in Cleveland, it has to be appealing if they have an opening.
I mean, if his son starts to establish himself as the guy, then and the Browns still stink and they want to make a move, I guess. But I'm not seeing that. No, Sean, I'm not. That's the one place I wouldn't see it. It seems like Shadur, based on what I just said a couple minutes ago, would really not be up for that. Meanwhile, I have one for you.
Yes.
Trey Lance, quote, fighting for his NFL career in the Hall of Fame game that's coming up here. I feel badly for this dude, man. I thought he was going to be really good, and I thought he was in a place early in his career in San Francisco that might work for him, but it just goes to show that even when you have a brilliant quarterback mind and an offensive guru like a Kyle Shanahan, even he misidentifies guys, right?
Yes, but here's the crazy thing that you always think of. This was the thing that changed the course of an organization. Trey Lance was going to be their starter a few seasons ago. He had a rough week one performance. I think they lost to the lowly Bears.
Yeah.
He was having a better game two, suffered an injury. I think it was a broken ankle or something along those lines. They go to Jimmy G. Before Lance can come back, Jimmy G gets hurt. They go to Brock Purdy. If Lance never gets hurt, they probably have him play the majority, if not the entirety of that season as the 49ers quarterback. Everything would have been different. Maybe he becomes a guy that's at least a serviceable starter. We've never really seen him get in games and fail. He's just not playing at all. So it is a fascinating arc of what happened to him with one injury when he had that opportunity, and it seems like he may never get that opportunity
again. Man, sometimes it's all about the opportunity when it arises and what team you're with and all of that, especially it seems with quarterbacks. It's a matter of timing and place. Meantime, Aaron Rodgers is speaking right now to reporters, so hopefully we'll get that turned around in a hurry. We certainly have some of the quotes for you. This one via Mike DeFabo. Aaron Rodgers on working with Arthur Smith says, "I like the flexibility. Arthur is not rigid. He wants to tailor the scheme to personnel. Aaron Rodgers, as much as I have a good feel for the offense, I'm not what I would call an expert on the offense yet. I become an expert when you break the huddle and you can see the picture in your mind, and every now and then the picture is a little fuzzy still." Well, that's understandable. It's their first day in pads, for God's sakes, right? So, yeah, that would naturally take a little while with a new offense. The question is how long. But the bottom line here is we're going to be all over the Rodgers quotes and hopefully have some sound to turn around. As we're doing that, As we're doing that, the PM guys yesterday delivered a very strong opinion in which I and others were indicted. Those of us who feel that Ben Roethlisberger belongs ahead of Brett Favre among all-time quarterbacks. That was summarily dismissed by the PM guys, all three of them. I would include Donnie here.
I would include intern Dom even.
Yeah, and intern Dom yesterday said the same thing. Like, it's not even conceivable. It's ludicrous that anybody would think that Ben should be ahead of Brett Favre on the all-time quarterback list. I'm going to tell you why it's not ludicrous at all, and in fact, why Ben does belong ahead of Brett Favre. And this is not, you know, homering for Ben here. I don't even like Ben that much. At least I certainly didn't. I don't think he liked me very much when we were both working in the same locker room, so to speak. So it's certainly not
about... Must have been a dossier that he read about you. He might not have. Positive.
He might have, according to Kabali. So it's not about that at all. It's not about, you know, seeking any sort of positive feedback or trying to ingratiate myself, if that's the right word, with Ben. Those days have long since passed, or with the Steeler fan base. I hope I've earned a reputation where I'll say what I think no matter what, whether it's the Pirates or anybody else. I simply say what I think. That's what I do. And in this case, I think I have a pretty solid case for Ben.